Welcome to the Phil Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy, recording at 12:43 p.m. and that is Pacific Standard Time. Today is December 23rd. I thought I would concentrate today on shares that are breaking on the upside or those that are underperforming by a considerable measure. First that pops to mind is Tesla. This is the company that some people love to love, others love to hate, but it is pushing to new all-time highs in here this week. The share has doubled from its low earlier on this year. In fact, it's more than doubled, but it's not up all that much from its starting point this year. So that really gives us a picture of just how much volatility the share has experienced. But it's one of a frighteningly small number of auto manufacturers that is actually at new all-time highs. In fact, I can't think of another one. In fact, if we go and think about how the sector has performed over the last decade, Tesla is by far the best performer of all the auto manufacturers, despite the fact that its valuations are at really quite incredible levels compared to, for example, some of the more legacy manufacturers. Ford, for example, has got a valuation that puts it squarely in the value proposition with a PE of 7 and a yield of 6. It is just about finding support above the $8 area and right in the region of the trend mean right now. Well, if we're thinking about what is the share if between the two, which one is likely to do best in 2020, I think the contrarian bet would be to think about something like Ford, considering that it has got a very prolonged downtrend behind it and is showing the first signs of relative strength, then obviously there is a pairs trade to be had here. Nonetheless, the relative strength that we're seeing from Tesla is also a vote in favor of the fact that we are back in a massively liquidity-fueled environment. The Federal Reserve is trying to support the repo market with huge infusions of liquidity. That is a very significant factor. Well, the other source of relative strength that we're seeing right now is in Europe. The euro pulled back from the region of its trend mean last week. It was in mildly positive territory in here today. But I think the broader picture is when we look at, for example, the Eurostoxx 50, which is just 50 of the largest shares in the Eurozone. It bounced from the upper side of its underlying range at the beginning of December. It's been pushing on to new high ground. It is within striking distance of the peaks put in back in 2015. But I think the much more interesting chart is the long-term chart, because it has been ranging below this peak put in 2007 for most of the last 5 years. If we can see it pushing through to the upside in 2020, I think it's quite likely we're going to see the 2007 peak challenged. If it can take that out, we could be back looking at the 2000 peak. And that's a significant ways from where the price is at present. It also helps to highlight the fact that when we contrast that pattern with the Eurostoxx index, which is the much broader index of Eurozone shares, then the 2007 peak was almost at the same level as the one in 2000, whereas the Eurostoxx 50, which is much more concentrated, did not perform quite as well going into the peak in 2007. We're also starting to see that a number of the peripheral markets are starting to do better. The Greek index pushed on to a new recovery high in here today and continues to look like it can move higher from here. The IBEX in Spain was also in a new recovery high territory. When we look at, for example, the Portuguese index, it's also been finding support in the region of its trend mean within the context of a much broader basing pattern. The Eurostoxx Banks Index has also been demonstrating support in the region of the trend mean over the course of the last couple of weeks. So I think there is a case to be made that we're back in a demand-dominated environment for the European stock market. Then when we think about Japan, I think the most important, or perhaps the most interesting chart right now in Japan is the JGB yield. It has pushed back above zero for the first time all year, and that is a clear downtrend we're seeing in the price of JGBs. But what it also is going to bring back into focus is the BOJ's commitment to manage yields so they do not exceed 10 basis points. When we had such record levels of negative yields back in September, getting all the way down to a negative 23 basis points, there was nobody really considering that the BOJ is actually attempting to compress yields. But now, as the yield comes back up to the 10 basis point level, that is going to necessitate some hard choices at the Bank of Japan. Are they going to go forward and start buying the bonds again in order to compress the yields? That's an important consideration in terms of liquidity when we think about the Nikkei. It's been in negative territory the last 4 or 5 days, but certainly this doesn't look like anything like the kind of downward dynamics we saw in 2018 from that 24,000 point level. There's a short-term overbought condition, but it doesn't look like anything more than that. And yeah, we might get some consolidation in this area. I think we've already got some evidence of that. But as long as the Bank of Japan is continuing to support the bond markets, I think what we're seeing here is just a consolidation before we see additional upside. The yen also looks like it is finding some support here around the lows for the year, or at least the lows over the course of the second half of the year. When we think about the trajectory of the yen's trading versus the dollar, it's been largely range-bound now for nearly 3 years. But there has been a mild upward bias to that trading, where we've seen this progression of lower rally highs by the dollar against the yen. That is going to have to be broken in order to question the gradual process of yen strengthening. And I think that has been one of the factors in holding the Nikkei in its range. The dollar index, having broken down and broken its sequence of higher reaction lows about 4 weeks ago, is now right back in the region of the trend mean. This is exactly the kind of area where we might anticipate some resistance coming through. And we're seeing just the first evidence of a pause here. The Federal Reserve is back printing, and printing faster than it has done historically, but also relative to every other central bank in the world. Then they've also cut interest rates, which has narrowed the interest rate differential, although that is still in favor of the dollar. If we continue to see the quantity of dollars in circulation increase, which is the net result of this turn to continued monetary accommodation, then it's quite likely that's going to remove the bullish case for the dollar. Well, the gold price has been really quite calm. It was up $7 in here today, but and I do think that there is the potential here that we're going to see additional upside. There has been a downward bias to trading since the peak in September. But what I've found particularly encouraging is the modest size of this consolidation, about $100 following what was a $200 advance is it's in fact more than that. It's almost a $300 advance if we go back to the lows in May. Well, that's quite modest. And then the lengthy period of time it's taken to pull back by $100, I think all of that is rather encouraging. when we look at the correlations between the last major breakout that we saw in gold all the way back in 2002, the size of the breakout was almost the same, and the duration between the initial surge and the eventual completion of the base formation was also relatively similar. The retracement in 2002 went all the way back down to test the region of the trend, the trend mean, but also at the time, that trend mean coincided with the upper side of the base formation. On this occasion, the rather gradual pace of consolidation has allowed the trend mean to catch up. Now, there is still a somewhat overbought condition, but what we are starting to see, and I do think this is rather encouraging, is that silver prices are looking increasingly steady, and we're up in a reasonably dynamic manner in here today. They did come all the way back down and test the region of the trend mean, and are looking increasingly likely to be able to go back up now and test this $18 level. If it can sustain a move above $18, then I think we really are back in a demand-dominated environment. Platinum was really quite impressive in here today as well. It completely countermanded the downward dynamic that we saw on Friday. Now, if it can push back above the $950 area, well, then it will have clearly broken the sequence of lower rally highs, and I think that will then confirm more than short-term support in the region of the trend mean. Platinum hasn't quite been able to break out of its base formation yet, neither has silver for that matter. And a sustained move above 1,000 would be, I think, a rather important move for platinum, because it would clearly suggest that the lengthy downtrend has in fact ended. When we then think about, I'm just gonna just make sure that I didn't turn off my microphone by accident. We look at the peak that platinum put in all the way back in 2008, then we're talking about a level that is today is considerably below half of where the price eventually peaked. When we then think about the incredible uptrend we're seeing in palladium prices, well, palladium was also in positive territory in here today, and it has demonstrated support now at the upper side of the underlying trading range. This is exactly where the price needed to find support if the trend is going to remain consistent, and so far this is really rather encouraging action. Then I think it's if we before we look at the ratio, let's just simply compare the performance of the NYSE Arca Gold Bugs Index. It has now consolidated above the range put in between October and November, and it steadied rather impressively from that level in here today. Now, that's looking increasingly like a bullish consolidation following the almost full reversion to the mean earlier on this year. But the vast majority of people no longer look at the Gold Bugs Index. They keep an eye on the Gold Miners ETF, GDX, and that has not yet been able to push up and out of the range between October and November. In fact, it's been ranging below the $28 level for just about all of December as well. So what we're seeing is that the Gold Bugs Index, which is unhedged, Gold Bugs is the Bullion Unhedged Gold Miners Index. So that is leading here. What it suggests is that when we just put the ratio in one against the other, that unhedged gold miners are clearly outperforming, but most particularly outperforming over a relatively short period of time, which has been just in the last 6 or 7 weeks. Now, they underperformed the broader gold miners index for most of the period immediately after the initial surge in 2016. So what that is suggestive of is there is at least some demand coming through for unhedged gold miners exposure. And we've spent a pretty prolonged period of time ranging in the precious metals sector. There is the potential that we are coming up on the next significant move on the upside. And when we then start to think about, well, why is that? Well, it could be potentially because investors are no longer willing to give the benefit of the doubt to the dollar. They're perhaps also considering that the Federal Reserve moving back into a clear monetary stimulus environment is going to have a negative effect on the value or the purchasing power of fiat currencies. And having at least a position or a hedge in the form of an asset that cannot simply be printed into existence, or lent into existence, perhaps more accurately, then that is beginning to make progressively more sense. What it suggests is that we're going to see the potential for gold miners and gold shares to outperform in 2020. Then I think it is worth looking at some of the shares that have been doing particularly well coming up on the end of the year. Apple has been accelerating higher, going from a low around 150 at the beginning of 2019. It is closing in on $300. A doubling in 12 months for one of the largest companies in the world is pretty spectacular in terms of performance. Well, the first clear downward dynamic is likely to mark a peak of at least near-term significance. And we are accustomed, I think, at this stage to seeing rather significant pullbacks in Apple. Then when we think about Microsoft, it hasn't been quite as powerful on the upside this year. Nonetheless, it's up about 60% from the low put in early January. And this is also a really quite impressive uptrend. Facebook has been self-flagellating for really the last 18 months, but it is now forming from the region of the trend mean. It is back in the region of the upper side of its range, and it would really need a clear downward dynamic to question potential for additional upside in here. And Google. I saw a rather interesting article today about the universal translator that they have developed, which I personally find really quite amazing. But the most important thing that the share has done has been to break up and out of its range and then consolidate before pushing higher again. Now, the share was in negative territory today, and there is a short-term overbought condition relative to the trend mean. What I suspect is that the momentum that is driving these shares higher is representative of the continued demand for momentum shares during the Santa Claus rally phase. Well, the Santa Claus rally phase generally lasts all the way through until the first week of January. And then people start to take bets upon what is likely to do best in the new year. Do you continue to support the accelerating trend, or do you buy the breakouts from lengthy periods of underperformance? Some of the worst performing shares in 2018 are in the retail sector or in the travel sector. TripAdvisor, for example, is at a very close to a new low. When we think about the outlook for Macy's, then it is has been ranging now for most of the last 4 months. There is the potential that it is these shares could pop on the upside next year, because if shares like Apple and Microsoft are benefiting from the Santa Claus rally, then it is also the potential that it is the worst performers are performing worst because of tax selling coming up towards the end of the year. When we get to the end of the year, the tax selling will have ended. All that will then be left will be potential buyers. So there is the scope for some of these companies that have done very badly in December to do somewhat better in January. I think that's particularly relevant for a company like Darden Restaurants. It found support in the region of the trend mean on almost every single occasion that it pulled back between 2014 and the middle of this year. And now it's encountering resistance in the region of the trend mean. This is potentially type 2 top with right-hand extension, and it is going to have to at least sustain a move back above 120 to question that hypothesis. But this is also representative of the consumer, considering that that Olive Garden and Red Lobster are the kinds of restaurants that could be considered to be reasonably priced. Then, when we look at Amazon, the share has not participated in the accelerations we've seen for Apple and Microsoft, and it has continued to range below its trend mean, although it has been in positive territory over the course of the last week. And then I think we've got Boeing. Well, this is one of the biggest, most volatile ranges of any of the shares in the major indices, I think, in the US markets, and it looks like a type 3 top formation. And it's going to have to sustain a move back above 400 in order to question that hypothesis, that the company represents a major employer in its own right, but it's also got a very large web of suppliers. When we think about the 153,000 employees it has itself, that doesn't pay much consideration to all of the additional companies that rely on Boeing for their livelihood, 261 different suppliers. So what happens with Boeing is going to have a significant knock-on effect, and with planes falling out of the sky and spacecraft missing their rendezvous, they've just fired the CEO, which was, I think, quite predictable. But the big question is now, what are they going to do to stem the rot? And that kind of rationalization process is potentially going to have a significant knock-on effect. We need to continue to monitor the unemployment rate. And if that does start to tick upwards, well, then we really do have to be alert to the potential that 2020 will hold a recession. There's no evidence of that just yet, and the continued supply of liquidity is a rather important factor. There is the real potential that they are going to avoid a recession simply by buying their way out of it. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, but I'll wish all the best to all of you.